Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Session Persistence Mechanism in IBM WebSphere Application Server. Today's presenter is Varun Talapagada. Varun has been in WebSphere Application Server support since February 2006. Specializing in various components, including session management, web container, dynamic caching, class loader, and security. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Varun.
Thank you, Joseph. Good morning to everyone. Welcome to my presentation, Session Persistence Mechanisms in IBM WebSphere Application Server. If you have any questions in later point of this session, you can always send an email that has been listed in the very first page of the presentation along with the subject, Session Persistence Mechanisms in IBM WebSphere Application Server, so that I will be happy to respond to your emails. Going to slide number two. Today, I will cover the following topics. The agenda is, first, I will briefly cover brief overview of HTTP session and some important API calls from the server aspect. And then I will cover the WebSphere application server and where the session management exists in WebSphere application server. And then I will discuss about some of the local or in-memory sessions. And then I will cover the distributed sessions and different mechanisms like database persistence and memory-to-memory persistence or replication. And then we will discuss some problem determination, and then best practices, and then the resources, and at the last, but not least, we will open for a question and answer session. Going to slide number three, HTTP session management. Let's discuss briefly on what is HTTP session, and then about the various API calls. Going to slide number four, it's really a challenge to maintain the state information across the multiple user widgets in the application. As we all know, HTTP protocol is a stateless protocol. We use the HTTP session to maintain the state. When the HTTP client interacts with the servlets, the state information associated with the series of the client request is represented as a HTTP session and identified by a session ID. So session management is responsible for managing all the HTTP sessions and providing storage for session data and allocating session IDs and track the session IDs associated with each and every client request. So here I outlined some of the very important API calls from the servlet spec. Though there are many other methods, I'm just covering very important API calls related to this session management. To create or access the session, application developers need to call the request.getSession. And isNew method is used to verify if the session is new or it is an existing session from the application. Once the session is returned to the application, application can get the attribute or the application can modify the session attributes with the methods get attribute and set attribute methods. So we can use these methods to get the attributes or set the attributes from the application. And also, we can see how long the session is inactive and to get the creation times and last access times, etc. We use these methods, last methods, and the application can also set the max inactive interval to dictate, you know, how long the session should present in the container after it last accessed. So these are the methods. Get creation time will return the when the session got created first time, and the get last access time will return the time when the session got last access, because these are very important to identify how long the session should to find out from the application. And getMax inactive interval time will return how long the session is inactive in the without using that session. So we can cut that value also. Application developers can also invalidate the sessions from the application by calling the session.invalidate. So the session will get invalidated and removed from the store apart from, invalidating from the by the session manager. Going to slide number 5. These are very other important listener classes. These session listeners are very useful when application, needs to listen any kind of session changes. So application developers needs to implement these listeners to listen the activities of the session changes, Here are very important listener interfaces. One is, the very first one is HTTP session listener. I have just listed very common methods that can be used to listen any changes to the session. Session created and session destroyed, these are the methods invoked when a new session gets created or when existing session is destroyed, The session will be destroyed when the session is invalidated or when the web application is stopped. So if the application wanted to listen to any kind of changes to the attributes, application needs to implement the other interface that I listed here, HTTP session attribute listener. So when a new attribute is added, the attribute added method is invoked, and when the attribute is removed from the session, so attribute removed method is invoked. So same way, when an attribute is replaced, the attribute replaced method is invoked. The other very important interface is HTTP session activation listener, which is very important for the distributed sessions. I will discuss what the distributed sessions in the later slides. These activation listeners are invoked when the session manager tries to serialize and serialize the data and for making the data to the persistent store, like a database or other JVM. Here, the persistent store could be other JVM. We are using memory-to-memory persistence. We will discuss in the later slides on what are those persistence mechanisms. And the persistent store could be either JVM or the database, depends on the configuration. Session managers will perform the serialization or deserialization of the data when the data is to be replicated from one JVM to the other JVM or to the database. So if the application wanted to listen when the object is bound to a session application, right, and the application need to implement the HTTP session binding listener, where the value unbound or value bound methods are invoked if we implement these listeners. In addition to the above listeners, let's discuss about what is IBM session listener. This is specific to the IBM SP application server. And the IBM session listener interface, it extends the HTTP session listener interface. So whatever methods that you get in the HTTP session listener, apart from that, you can get some other listeners which are very useful with the IBM session listener. So this listener is very useful to notify an application that its session has been removed from server's cache. So this could be because the session got timed out or the session was programmatically invalidated with the session.invalidate method, or the session cache is full and this is the least recently used session. So let's discuss one example here. Let's see, in a clustered environment with session persistence is enabled, when a session gets invalidated, right, it will be invalidated from one JVM of that particular cluster only, and the sessions will be removed from all the other server's caches. But so if you are implementing the IBM session listener, the session removed from cache method will be invoked. So you can do whatever activities that needs to be done in those methods, either to clean up something and other stuff. Let's move on to the next slide, slide number 6. HTTP session management, web spirit and HTTP session management. I will talk about session management in WebSphere and where this can be configured in application server. So let's move on to slide number 7. Session manager in WebSphere application server can be configured in various levels. So session manager can be configured at application server level and enterprise application level, or the web application level. So once the application got deployed, enterprise application got deployed, we can either configure the session management functionality or the configurations in the server level or enterprise application level or the web application level. So if this is configured in the server level, then the same settings can be applicable to all web modules in that particular server. And if the session manager is configured at the enterprise application level, those settings are applicable to all the web modules in that particular application only. If this is configured at the web application level, then these settings are specific to that web module only. So setting the timeout values from the application with the API calls, it will take more precedence, and the settings specified in the server level and EAR level or enterprise application level will override the values specified in the application with the API calls. So if you are specifying any settings in the server level, like the timeout values, and if you specify different timeout values from your application, that takes more precedence. Choosing session tracking mechanisms. So we can choose the WebSphere application server, since it strictly follows the J2EE spec, it supports all these, you know, session tracking mechanisms, cookies, URL relating, and SSLID tracking. But in WebSphere application server 7.0 version onwards, SSLID tracking is deprecated, so use either the cookies or URL relating. Depends on the application design and the requirements. We can specify session manager on what session tracking mechanism that it needs to use by choosing these session tracking mechanisms. I will show you the where exactly it exists in the WebSphere application server panel in the next upcoming slide. By default, the cookies is selected. So depends on the application requirements and design, application developers can implement the session tracking mechanism with cookies, URL relating, or enable SSLID tracking. But the default, the cookies is selected. So enable protocol switch rewriting. So this option can be enabled only if the URL rewriting is used as a session tracking mechanism. This option is used to decide if the session ID should be sent in the URL when the switch between HTTPS and HTTP happens. Going to slide number 8. So in this slide, I'm just presenting on where the server level settings can be done. This is the location where the server level settings can be configured in the admin console of the application server. It would be under application servers, and when you click on the server name and there you click on the session management, that's where you see this panel. So there are various properties that we can set in the session management panel. Like we can select the session tracking mechanism. Like I said, by default, this is cookies enabled. And also can specify various other settings like how many sessions that can stay in memory, right? And session invalidation timeouts, etc. Of course, we will discuss these properties in the next upcoming slides in detail. In the same panel, we have a link to the distributed settings on the right side. where we have an option to choose session persistence mechanisms. So the either database or memory-to-memory application, we can select if we go into the distributed environment settings. And, of course, the custom properties. Those are the properties that if we need to add any custom properties. We will discuss about these things in the next upcoming slides. We will talk more about local sessions versus distributed sessions also in the upcoming slides. When the enable cookies is checked on this panel, right, we will see a panel as shown on the right-hand side where we can change the cookie settings. So by default, the cookie name that is being used by the session manager is the JSession ID, which is the default one to track the sessions. We can change this cookie name to whatever name we wanted if there are any conflicts with any other applications running in the same domain. So there is a good chance that if we run into some problems where the cookie name conflict, where the same JSession ID cookie is being used by the other applications, if we need to change, there is an option to change this particular one. And then restrict cookies to HTTPS sessions. If this is selected, then cookies will be encrypted. So if we wanted these cookies to be encrypted, then we need to use this particular option. Cookie domain is another option. This tells what domain should be allowed or what cookies should be sent from the browser or to the application server. So let's say if an user navigates across, rally.ibm.com and austin.ibm.com, in both the cases, the domain name is same, and the cookies associated to these two are same, and you will run into problems. So you might end up with having some problems and where the cookies will be overridden from one server to the other server. So in these scenarios, you can restrict the domain by providing the right domain so that the right cookies will be sent to this particular domain by the browser. So cookie path, we also can set this one here, and we can specify how long the cookie should live. By default, the cookies age is restricted to current browser session. That means once you close the browser, the session, the cookies will be lost, and new cookie will be created when a new browser is open. And you can specify how long the cookie should live and by specifying the time. So move on to the slide number 9. So here, this is the pictorial diagram of the session cookies. When a fresh request is sent from the browser to the web container, session manager creates a session because it will not see any session ID or the JSession ID cookie in that new request. So it creates a new session ID, and it sends back the JSession ID cookie to the client browser in the response. So then this JSession ID cookie is used to track the session mechanism in the web container for the subsequent request from the same user. So this JSession ID cookie consists of various things. One is the first four characters are called the cache IDs. Here in this picture, 0002. And the next 23 characters are the session ID, which is shown in the black one. And then the clone IDs, which are separated with a clone separator colon. So you can see one or more clone IDs separated by the clone separator. Depends on how many servers the request went to. If this is not a clustered environment, you will see a -1 at the end instead of the clone IDs. That tells that this is a standalone and it is not in a cluster. So by looking at the clone IDs, we can specify if it is a ND environment or the standalone server. So the cache ID would tell the session manager to see if there is any updates to the information, updated information is present. Otherwise, it tells the session manager. The session manager dictates by looking at this, it will see if a new copy needs to be loaded from the persistent store. So the JSON-ID cookie is very much used not only for the session manager but also used by the plugins, IHS plugins, to maintain the session affinity and also to the load balancing. So plugin uses the clone ID information here to maintain the session affinity. So JSON-ID cookie is very much used by the plugins also here. Session manager will use the cache ID. So as I said, it will look for the if the copy is it has the same that as present. Otherwise, it can store from the persistent store, or whether it is a new copy needs to be loaded from the persistent store. If it is the same copy or the new copy needs to be loaded from the persistent store, it decides with the cache ID, as I said. So this JSON-ID cookie is very important for any kind of session problems. So quite often, IBM support group might ask for the JSON-ID cookie along with the traces for analyzing the problems. Move to slide number 10. So this panel, I just outlined here, everything is same that we see for the server level. But only one difference is the red box that I outlined. So basically, this panel is the application level settings, session manager settings, that properties that we can configure. So we need to click on the enterprise applications and click on the session management, the application, and then session management to configure the settings at the application level. Remember, if you want to configure the session manager settings in the application level, right, you do not want the server level settings that you already configured at the server level, make sure to check this box, override session management. Otherwise, it is highlighted here in the red box. Otherwise, if it is not checked, then whatever the properties has been set in the server level will be used, and these properties have no meaning, and these properties are not used if we do not check this box. So all the properties are same, as I mentioned, with the server level in the earlier slide that I showed. Move on to slide number 11. So these are the session management properties. We will discuss more detail on what these properties and I already showed the session management panel, the server level or application level. We'll just discuss these properties. Maximum in-memory session count. By default, the value is 1,000 sessions. So this value will tell us how many maximum sessions will stay in active in its memory. So this value can be configured. You can change whatever the value you want based on the hardware and the requirements. So we have to be very careful while setting these high values of these settings, as it will fill up the JVM heap and will run out of memory problems or the hang problems. So we have to be very careful in setting these values. So in addition to this maximum in-memory session count, another option is available, that is allow overflow. So this setting is only applicable for the in-memory sessions. That means this is for the local sessions only. We'll discuss what are the local sessions and what are distributed sessions in the next upcoming slide. If session persistence is enabled, this setting will have no meaning, as the sessions that present in JVM are only max in memory sessions, and rest all the sessions will be anyway stored in the external store if we enable the session persistence mechanism. So, again, we have to be very careful while selecting this option, because if a malicious request are sent to the server by an user, right, then session manager will keep on creating new sessions, and the JVM will end up with out-of-memory problems or the performance issues. So we have to be very careful in selecting this option if no session persistence is enabled. So if this option is not checked, right, what will happen if the 1001 session comes. So if this option is not checked, what will happen is a dummy session or invalid session will be created after the 1000 sessions. So the invalid sessions will not return the J session ID in the response, but session manager will just send a null value in the response. So if the application code is doing some activities with this response object, so then you will run into some problems. So it's the application responsibility to check if this if the session is a proper session or valid session or not. So if this is not a valid session, they need to handle it and they need to throw write exceptions on that. So we will see live count greater than the session count in this kind of scenarios. So next one is the session timeout values. So by default, the session timeout is set at 30 minutes, but of course this can be changed. This can this value can be changed depending on the application requirements, and the session manager will invalidate the session once the inactivity timeout of 30 minutes is reached if the timeout is set as 30 minutes. So application server session manager will run a REPL thread that checks for inactivity, inactive sessions every time, and it will mark the sessions as inactive once the timeout is reached. So security integration is the next option, where if this option is checked, right, session manager will do an additional check to see if the request is coming from the valid user or not. So if this is checked, session manager, right, sessions created in the secured pages are created on the, under their identity, right, after the authenticated users. So they can only be accessed, only the authenticated users can be accessed the other secured pages by the same users. So to protect these sessions from use of any unauthorized users, so they cannot be accessed from the unsecured pages. So session manager will do definitely an additional checks if we select the security integration. Next option is the allow serialized access. If this is checked, right, the session manager will make sure that the only one thread will be accessed at any point of time and will not allow any access to the other sessions or the other requests by the same session by the other multiple threads. You know, for example, if the application makes use of framed screens, right, where all the framed screens are in application, makes a call to the servers, then those requests will try to use the same session. So if application is having some kind of threading issues, and to avoid those race conditions or the threading issues, this option is very much useful, right? Because this will go into a synchronized block, and because of this, the performance will be impacted. You need to take, you need to remember that the performance will be impacted if you select this one, this option, as we are not allowing any other threads, right, until the session manager releases the existing request from the synchronizer block. So with this allow serialized access, there are two other settings available. That is, once the maximum wait time, one is the maximum wait time, which tells the session manager on how long the session manager needs to wait before it accepts the next request to access the session. So you can specify the time interval on how long it needs to wait. That is the configurable settings, right? The allow access on timeout of settings, is that tells the session manager that whether the session manager needs to throw an exception or to allow the access to access on timeout. But that value is, with that particular allow serialized access on timeout. Move on to slide number 12. So let's local sessions. Let's discuss what are the local sessions versus the distributed sessions in the next few slides. Move on to slide number 13, local sessions. So these sessions that are present in the memory, right, of any JVM are called the local sessions, or non-distributed session. If a fresh request comes to an application server, right, if the session is not present in the in-memory, the session manager will create a session, and this new session is called the local session, and it gets stored in its memory of the JVM. So this session will not be distributed to other JVMs in the cluster. So during the failover scenarios, right, like when the server goes down, the session data will be completely lost because it's since these sessions are non-distributed sessions, and the failover request to the other servers in that particular cluster will not be having any clue of the session data that was stored in the failed server, as the sessions are not shared among the other JVMs. So the session data will be completely lost, and the users will be impacted on this particular one. So if you are not configuring the distributed sessions, those sessions are by default, that is a local, or the by default none is selected. I'll show you where this configuration is available in the admin console. If the distributed settings are not selected, we by default the session manager treats this one as a local session. Move on to slide number 14. So these are the this is the panel where I was talking about the local sessions. Here, by default, none is selected, which is local to that particular JVM only. And the other two options are for the distributed sessions or the session persistence mechanisms. One is the database and the memory to memory. So if none is selected, whatever the data stored in that particular server, JVM, will be completely lost when the server goes down, as you are not sharing this session to other JVMs in that particular cluster. So we will discuss the different custom tuning parameters in the later slides when we talk about the database persistence and memory-to-memory replication in more detail. So move on to slide number 15. So now it's time to talk about the persistence mechanisms. So we'll talk about what are the persistence mechanisms available in the application server, and more details on that we'll discuss. Move on to slide number 16. So these are the two types of persistence mechanisms available in the application server, which is first one is the database persistence, and the second one is the memory-to-memory replication. So when the session persistence is enabled, right, either with the database or the memory-to-memory replication, the sessions are called the distributed sessions. So the advantages we will see, as the sessions are shared among the different JVMs, these are called the distributed sessions. Remember, if the persistence is not enabled with the local sessions, the local sessions, right, this persistence is not enabled, those sessions are the local sessions, and second, sessions will be lost, and the data will be lost, and the users are really affected with the local sessions. So we can overcome that problem with the help of distributed sessions, as these sessions are shared among the other JVMs. So when a request comes to one JVM in that particular cluster, right, session data will be stored in its memory, and when, especially when the server goes down, the request will be failed over to the next available JVM, which is been done by the plugins, right? And then data will be recovered by external RDBMS database if database persistence is enabled. Otherwise, or the another JVM if the memory-to-memory persistence is enabled. So we will discuss about what is the database persistence in memory-to-memory. Going to the next slide. This is a pictorial diagram on how different persistence mechanisms. The database persistence is the top one, where it has got two application servers, right? Each has got web containers and each JVMs, two JVMs. And when request comes to the first JVM, the top JVM, let's say, and it tries to see if the data is available in that JVM, And if it is not available, right, it will try to get the session data from the data external database data store. And once the data is retrieved, it can return to the client. If first server goes down for some reason, then plugin will try to send this route the request to the second server from the top. So the second server will try to see if that particular session is available in its memory. And if it is not available, then it will try to search the session IDs or session data from the external database. And of course, since we use the database persistence there, the data will be there in the data store. So sessions will be retrieved, session data will be retrieved to this JVM, and this JVM will try to, you know, respond to the client. That's how the failover occurs here, and that's how the sessions are distributed here. And the second figure is the for the memory-to-memory replication, where it uses the data replication service. We'll talk about that. And when a request comes to the first server, then it tries to look for in its memory, and if it is there, then it will try to respond to the clients. And if it is not there, then it will search for that particular session ID in other JVMs, which is the second JVM, with the help of data replication service. So the data that it comes to the first server will be stored in its memory as well as in the second JVM. And there are some tuning parameters that we need to also take care of. We will discuss that in the later slides also. So when the first request, when the first server goes down in that memory-to-memory replication is enabled, and the request will be failed over to the second JVM, obviously it will have the backup data of the first server in its JVM, and it responds back to the clients. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 18. So database persistence, the very first persistence mechanism, we'll see what it is, and we'll discuss about this. So for this database persistence, we need to have the relational database product like DB2 or Oracle. So it's the additional database we need to have, as the data will be stored in this external data store whenever this session gets created. So we need to have an additional database. We can very well modify how this data needs to be stored with what intervals, with the tuning parameters that I will discuss. So when the database persistence is enabled, right, and if you have max in-memory sessions are set to 1,000, let's say, and if any further sessions are generated, and if the number of sessions exceeds this 1,000 sessions, then session manager will, the least recently used sessions will be passivated by the session manager to the database to make room for the newly arrived sessions. So one more very important thing is for the session data to be replicated or stored to the database, data store, right? All the session data must implement the java.io.serializable interface. For those sessions data which do not implement the serializable interface cannot be stored into the external database or data store. So whatever the objects you want to store in the session, that should implement java.io.serializable interface. So to configure the database persistence, we need to have, first one is, as I said, relational database product. And then we need to create a JDBC provider, connection pooling, right? And then we need to create a data source for that particular database, and then configure the session manager to use that particular data store, data source that has been created. For the distributed operating systems, the session manager will create all necessary database schemas automatically during the server startup. So you don't have to do anything except giving those details I mentioned earlier, those 4 points like creating a connection pooling and JDBC provider and the data source and configure the session manager. Those are the only things that you need to do. And the session manager will take care of creating the database schema automatically for the distributed operating systems. But for DB2 on ZOS, database administrators need to create the database schema manually. So I have outlined the URL how to do for more details on that particular schema. So moving to slide number 19. So here is a panel shows where the database session persistence can be set in the admin console. So if you click on the application servers and the server name and the session management, then click on the distributed settings. By default, the radio button database, by default, the none is selected. You need to select the database radio button for configuring the database persistence. So if you click on the database, we can configure the different necessary settings. We will see in the slide number 20. Let's move on to slide number 20. So these are the general properties that we need to provide after creating the connection pooling and data sources and other stuff in the earlier slides. So in order to configure the database, we need to configure the connection pool, as I said, and we need to provide the JNDA name here for the particular connection pool and the user ID and password. And remember, we need to give the same user ID and password that we provide during creation of the data pools. Apart from those settings, we can configure the DB2 row size or page size, which is for the database, DB2 database, along with the table space name. By default, it is 4K, and you can configure whatever values. So we can also specify if we want to use the multi-row schema. What it means is, by default, all the session data will be stored into a single record into the database. So if the amount of the data is more, as it is limited, a certain limit of the size only it accepts, and if you have many attributes that are stored in the database, then if each and every attribute is huge in size, then sum of all the attribute size should not exceed to that particular limit, right? So if you have 4 kilobytes of the data, then if you have 10 attributes, then all the attributes, sum of the all attributes should not exceed 4 kilobytes. If you have the single row, if you are not selecting the multi-row schema. So to overcome this problem, you can select the multi-row schema so that each attribute is stored in a separate record, and thereby you can store bigger size into the database. So each attribute can go up to 4 kilobytes. So, but remember, we need to store minimal data into the sessions, and we should not be storing the huge data into the session database. As session manager is to track the sessions, right? Whatever the information that is useful to track the session manager, only put that particular information in the database, but not the huge objects into the sessions. Because if you have, let's say, if you have 1,000 concurrent users coming in, and if you have each attribute is of 5 kilobytes, then you will run into out of memory problems or performance problems if the session data is too huge. And moving on to next slide, slide number 21. So here is the database persistence and the failover scenario. But before that, let's talk about what is the highlights of the database persistence. First one, you need to have external database product ready for storing the data, session data, and whatever the session attributes that you are trying to store in the sessions should implement the java.io. Serializable interface. Otherwise, the replication, data replication from the JVM to the database will not be done. So you need to be very careful in while you store the data to make sure that you should implement the java.io.serializable interface. And you need to create the connection pooling and JDBC providers, and you need to select the database radio button from the distributed environment settings, and then you can use multi-row schema if you wanted for larger amount of data if you want to store in the database. So here we'll just talk about a very simple failover scenario, how these session data will be retrieved from the database if a failover scenario occurs. Let's take the new request arrives to the plugin, and plugin sends that particular request to, let's say, member one, and application accesses the session by calling the get request, get session, and session manager creates a new session. If it is not formed, because since this is a very fresh request, it will create a new session and stores in the database, right? The JSON ID cookie will be sent back to the client in the response by the session manager. Session manager will send back this JSON ID cookie. And then if the member one is crashed or shut down, then next subsequent requests that are coming, that are arriving into the plugin will be, when the next request comes to the plugins, plugin will try to maintain the affinity, and since the server is not reachable, plugin will fail over request to the next available server, member two, based on the round robin mechanism that it has in the plugin config.xml file. And then when application access the session manager looks for the session in its memory first, and it fails to find it, and then session manager will tries to connect to the database with the database connection, and then retrieves data from the database, and the session manager in member 2 will increment the cache ID, that cache ID 0001 to 0002, and updates in the database in the memory and its memory. So member 2 will send the updated JSON ID cookie that it has, and sends back in the response to the client or the plugin. Moving to the next slide, we'll talk about these are the tuning parameters. Then by clicking on the custom tuning parameters link in the distributed environment settings space that we discussed, so here are the various tuning parameters that we can use. So a very high, medium, and low. So for the convenience, WebSphere provides users to select very high, medium, or low, depends on their requirements. Like suppose if you want for the performance, if you want for the better performance, you can select the very high, where the write frequency, write intervals, and write contents, and scheduled session cleanups are predefined. And if the application needs for any optimized failover, they can select low as the tuning parameters, where it is predefined with write frequency and write contents and scheduled session cleanup. So what is write frequency and write intervals and write contents? So write frequency, it has three items. One is parameters. One is end of service, servlet service, and manual updates, and time-based writes. So if the write frequency is selected with end of servlet service, what it does is the sessions or the data will be written to the persistent store, either to here in this case it is the database. In the case of memory to memory persistence, it would be another JVM. So at the end of the servlet service, the session data would be, stored into the session persistent store, which is the database here. If you select time-based writes, and if you specify the time interval, the session manager will write these session attributes into the database after that, once it reaches to that particular time. And then manual updates. So this session data will be written to the persistent store when a IBM session.sync is called. So IBM session needs to be implemented by the application to call this particular, to have this manual update. There is one more parameter which is called the write contents. Only the updated attributes or all attributes. Only updated attributes means that whenever you get a session and you modify the attributes, and once you set that particular attribute with a set session, then all the attributes that are already added to the session after a set attribute will be moved or stored into the database. So if you in this case if you are trying to get some attribute and modifying that attribute, and if you are not calling the set attribute, then that particular information will not be stored into the data store. So you need to, it is very important to note that you should call set attribute after you get an attribute and modify that attribute. So all attribute means all the attributes, irrespective of whatever you are setting, once the attribute gets modified, it will be stored into the data store. The third one is the scheduled session cleanup. Remember, the session timeout settings that you have in the distributed in the session management panel, where 30 minutes is the default value of the timeout value, and that value, if you are specifying this session cleanup value, right, the session manager will try to invalidate or remove the session attribute, session data from the database during this scheduled time interval. You can specify first time and second time of the time while you use the scheduled session cleanup. So moving on to the next slide, here are the tuning parameters that I was discussing so far. These tuning parameters, you can see this particular panel, right? When you go to the distributed environment settings and click on the tuning parameters. So we already discussed these, and you can select, as I said, very high, and medium, and low. These are the radio buttons you can select. If you predefined values will be selected based on what radio button you are selecting. And if you click on the custom settings, at the last one, then you will see a custom settings panel that I showed in the right-hand side. And these custom tuning parameters we already discussed on end of serverless service or manual updates or time-based writes. Here, if you select the time-based writes, if you give the time interval, whatever the seconds, you can specify. One very important thing is, if you have two servers, let's say, and if you are trying to get attribute, and if you have selected time-based writes, and if you are specifying 300 seconds as the time, and if you are storing any data, if you are modifying any attributes, that data will be stored after the 300 seconds only. So if you try to get the object or the attribute, it will not be available in the database once this particular first JVM goes down and the request tries to look for that particular attribute. You will not get that attribute in the database until that time is reached. So if you are having issues, like you are trying to modify some objects and this session during the failover you are not able to retrieve that particular object or the attribute from the session, when the failover server is trying to find from the database, then the very first thing I would check is this time-based writes, what write frequency you have. So it depends on the application and the requirement, you can set these values. So there is no hard and fast that you need to set certain values. So let's move on to slide number 24, web server plugins. This is a web server plugin plays a very, very important role in the network deployment configurations, because it uses for the load balancing of the incoming request, right? If the load is so huge, then it knows what request, whether the request to be sent to a particular server or not depends on how much load it is handling, depends on the round-robin algorithm that is defined in the plugin configured XML file. So it also maintains the session affinity for all existing sessions, right? Plugin sends requests to the same server where the session data exists in memory. And let's say you have sent a request, the very first request goes from one user to server JVM1, and then the next subsequent request, when it receives by the plugin knows where the request came initially from, depends on the by looking into its clone ID, and it sends that information to that particular JVM only. This is called the affinity. So when the target server is not reachable, by any chance, if the server 1 goes, JVM 1 goes down, and then the target server, the request is failed to the different server in that particular cluster, and plugin will decide what server it needs to send the request. So plugin uses clone ID information present in the JSON ID cookie that we discussed of the incoming request to route the request to the application server. So it plays very important role in the ND environment. So here is a note that in case of memory-to-memory, peer-to-peer, we will talk about that. Session manager encodes partition ID, right? Partition ID is the one which is used by the web server plugins from the JSON ID cookie, and then plugin uses dynamic partition table for the application server to route the request. And during the hot failover, it knows what backup server it got the information, and it routes the information to that backup server by checking the partition IDs. So in this case, the JSON ID cookie will contain the partition IDs, but not the clone IDs. So plugin uses this partition ID. Let's say if you have 20 or 30 servers, 30 JVMs, and in the memory-to-memory, and if the server goes down, and the backup data is stored in the other 90, either one of the other 19 servers, so it will not go and check for each and every JVM, but it knows what server it needs to go directly with the partition ID. So we'll discuss that. Going to slide number 25. Let's talk about what is memory-to-memory replication and what are the advantages of memory-to-memory replication over the database persistence. So in this memory-to-memory replication, the sessions are stored in its memory as well as the other JVMs, and it provides the same functionality that we get when we configure the database persistence. So it doesn't require any overhead of having the production database system products, so it will eliminate some of the costs, because whatever the sessions it creates, it will store in its memory as well as the other JVMs in that particular cluster. So it doesn't require any database. So it also definitely eliminates single point of failure that it can occur with the database. If the database is down, everything will be down because the entire data will be lost. So it avoids that kind of single point of failure that it can occur with the database. Data replication service, DRS, it plays very important role here in the for memory-to-memory replication, because this is an internal WebSphere application server component, and memory-to-memory replication uses this particular DRS to replicate the data to the other JVMs. We already saw the pictorial diagram earlier. So the other consumers for this DRS are dynamic caching and stateful session beams are the other consumers for the DRS. So If you are using Dynacache as well as the session management, right? So we'll talk about what replication domain means, but the replication domain should be separate. Replication domain should be created while having the session manager as well as the Dynacache. You should have a separate replication domain. So replication domain should be created either manually or while creating the cluster. You have an option to create the replication domain manually from the admin console. I'll show you that. Or you can create this while creating a cluster before configuring the data DRS. So as I said, do not use the same replication domain for Dynacache as well as the session or stateful. You need to have separate replication domains for each of them. Going to slide number 26, memory-to-memory replication, how we configure. So first we need to create the replication domain and then select the memory-to-memory replication persistence from the distributed environment setting space of the session manager panel that we already saw. So provide the general properties like replication domain and replication mode. We'll discuss these things, what these replication modes are and how we create the replication domain in the next few slides. You can have the replication mode either client mode or the server mode or both mode. So based on these replication modes, you can these are the topologies we support, the WebSphere supports. One is peer-to-peer replication, and second one is the client-server replication. Going to slide number 27. So peer-to-peer topology. This is the most commonly used topology because in this basic peer-to-peer topology, in that particular cluster, each JVM can host the web applications, and it can respond for the incoming requests from the plugin and send changes to the HTTP sessions that it wants, as well as it also receives backup copies of that particular HTTP session from the other JVMs in the particular cluster. So it can act as both client as well as server. So the advantage of this topology is no additional process or the products are required, like the database product, we don't require that, and so that we can avoid the single point of failure that I mentioned earlier. Hot failovers is the one which I described earlier, which uses the partition ID here, and the plugin knows where to send that particular request when the first server goes down, so that it will reduce any kind of performance impact when the server goes down. So this is the most stable. You can get the most stable implementation is achieved when each node has equal capabilities like CPU and memory, and each handles the same amount of work. So here, in the peer-to-peer topology, the memory-to-memory application is selected. At least one backup server must be running always, because if you have only two servers in that particular cluster and one server goes down, then the second server is the only server available, and it do not have any other JVMs to store the backup data. So you will get, while invalidating the sessions, since the invalidation threats, runs on the backup servers, you will run into some problems. So you need to be very careful and make sure that you should have at least one JVM in that particular cluster. So I would start with the three JVMs in that cluster, because one server goes down, two JVMs are left, and they can act back-to-back for each of them. So going to slide number 28, here is a pictorial representation of the peer-to-peer topology. Like each and every server, there are three servers represented here with a replication domain on the right and HTTP servers, which maintains the affinity. When the first request comes to the first server, then it stores the data in its local copy, as well as it stores the data into the backup copy in the other JVMs also. So when the first server goes down, the plugin sends the request to the second server, and second server, it definitely finds the session information in its local copy, in its backup copy or local copy, because the JVM1 data is already been backed up here. So going to slide number 29, client-server topology. So this is another kind of topology where we select some of the JVMs as client and some of the JVMs as servers. In this particular topology, servers can act as either replication clients only or the servers only, right? And the application servers configured as servers stores the session information of the clients, other clients, and purely act as a database. So cannot host any kind of application and do not respond to any user request. But it stores the session of their own memory and provides session information to the clients as and when it is required. So these JVMs that configured as servers must be started before the client servers which are provide any problem. So application servers configured as client. So they will keep their own sessions in their session data in their JVMs, and it will send all the information of its own to the servers which acts as a backup store. So client applications, you can host the applications on this particular client, and you can and the response to the user request as only the from the sessions the users with whom they interact with. So it responds to all the requests from the plugin. Going to the slide number 30, here is a client server topology, how we define. In the right hand side, these are the JVMs that are configured as servers, server modes. And the replication domain acts in between. And the left-hand side, you see all these client machines where we configured these JVMs as clients, acting as clients. So when a request comes to the plugin, then it goes to the first server. It keeps all of its own data into its own memory and also send the data to the replication domain, and replication domain will keep that particular backup data into the any one of the backup servers here. So when the first server goes down and the fresh request comes from the plugin, it will check in its memory, and of course it will not contain it in its memory of the second JVM, and it retrieves that particular session data from the backup servers and responds back to clients. Moving to slide number 31, here is what replication domain look like and how it can be created while perhaps manually. In the left hand side of the admin console, you can click on the replication domain and create a domain here, and you can provide information here whether single replica, number of replicas, single replica or entire domain, or specify how many replicas you need to configure. That means this session, the replication domain will decide based on these parameters to store the backup data in one server, or the entire domain means it will keep all the backup data in all the servers. So on the right hand side, the memory to memory, the pictorial diagram I have provided, where you can select this memory to memory by going into the distributed environment settings and clicking on memory to memory replication. You need to specify whatever the replication domain that you created on the left hand side figure, the same replication domain name you can select here, so that these servers, whatever the server you are configuring, these servers can be configured with this particular replication domain name. And replication modes, as I specified, client only, server only, and both client and server. Both client and server is for the peer-to-peer topology that I mentioned, and the client and servers are specified in the client-server topology. Moving on to slide number 32, let's talk about real quick on what are the main points from the memory-to-memory session persistence. First, it doesn't require any external database to store the sessions. and it uses the JVMs as the store, so you can avoid some costs, and also the performance can be improved because the connecting to the database is really a challenge. So with the memory to memory, you can achieve a hard failover, because if the database is down, it is hard to all the data, since all the data will be lost, you cannot get the data from the database as the database is already down. So you can avoid that kind of problems if you have memory to memory, as it knows what server plugin will route the request to the right JVM and fix the data from the database, from the other JVMs. So here is a failover scenario, how it goes. So when a new request arrives to the plugin decides to send the first fresh request to, let's say, member one, and the application it calls the get session, and session manager creates a new session and it stores in its data store and in its own JVM, and also it stores in the other JVMs. So in this case, the J session ID cookie will be sent back to the clients in the response, and the session gets replicated to other servers in the cluster at that point of time, like if the other cluster members are member 2 and number 3. So you have the backup of member 1 into member 2 and member 3. So member 1 is, let's say, crashed at dawn. The subsequent request from the user arrives to the plugins, and plugin tries to go or tries to maintain the affinity, and it tries to send the request to the same JVM, but it is, since it is not reachable, it round robins and sent to the other JVMs in the cluster based on the algorithm. And the second JVM, since the backup data for the member one is already there, it can pick that particular, it can achieve or get the data from the database and send back to the client in the J session ID cookie in the response. So moving to slide number 33. So the next one is the problem determination. We'll talk about real quick on what common problems we get, and what data we normally get and what data we don't normally see. Going to slide number 34. So the very common problem is session affinity is failing. That means whatever the server it is earlier going, or the initial session got created, it is not going to the same server, but it is going to the different servers. Why it is that so? So we need to see why the affinity is broken here. Because session plugin is the one, web server plugin is the one which maintains the affinity. And if you are not using the web server plugins, and then the affinity will not be maintained at all. Check the, we will normally check the session persistence is configured properly or not, and see if there is any problems with the session persistence. And then we make sure that the plugin config.xml file is the latest one that you are using or not, because you need to regenerate the plugin whenever there is any changes to the application or to the configuration changes in the admin console of the application server, and propagate the plugins to the right plugin config.xml file. So we review the plugin rest to see if plugin is picking up the right clone ID information. Because if it goes to JVM1 and the clone associated to JVM1 is, let's say, clone 1, and we will see if that particular clone 1 is properly picked by the plugin or not, and the from the session cookie or not, and as well as we will see if it is sending to the right server or not. So especially if you are using the peer-to-peer topology, then plugin uses dynamic partition table, as I mentioned, and to maintain the affinity. So if there is any issues with the partition IDs, we will see that also. Make sure to upgrade the plugins with application server upgrades also. So plugins should be in the same level or the upper level of the application server version. If you are having the application server as version as 7.0, and if you are using the plugins to 6.1, which is not good, and you will run many problems with the plugins and this kind of problems, and it is always advisable to have the plugins at the same level of the application server or the upper level. So second problem is a new session is created on every access from the same client. These are the common problems we see where we check for the JSON ID in the request from the same client, if it is coming from the same client or not. And also we will check for the inactive interval time, if it is creating a new session as it reaches to the inactive interval time. If it is not the one, then we will look into the traces to see what's happening, session traces to be see what's happening. Moving on to slide number 35. Session data crossover, this is a very complex problem that we deal with the session management, because you will get the session data crossover. Let's say if user 1 is accessing his bank account and user 2, when he logs into his bank account, he observes the user 1's account, which is very, very bad, and these are very critical problems. And we see these kind of problems by, like, the first thing we see is the session ID, JSession ID. We'll get the JSession ID cookie from both the users, and then we normally get the session attributes that are swapping, and then URL, failing URL also, and then verify if, also we will verify if concurrent requests are being served by the web SPS when the data was swapped, and we will see that one also in the traces. And also we have one custom property that needs to be set, which is called a debug session crossover, which tells if the session is associated with the request is accessed or referenced is correct or not. So we will normally ask customers to enable this kind of custom property to verify in the traces, session traces. So the last one is to have the debug statements added to the application code, because application code we always need help from the development team also by adding some debug statements in the application code. Going to slide number 36, session data lost. This is also very one more important thing we will find from many customers. So We'll first find whether this session, all the session data is lost or some certain attributes. So if those are, some attributes are lost, then what are those attributes? And we need to make sure, is this happening because of the failover occurs? If it is not, then we will see if all the attributes are implementing the serializable interface or not. If you are not implementing the serializable interface, then data will be lost while the replication is done from one JVM to the other JVM or from JVM to the data store. So we will check to see if any exceptions in the system out log or system error log that finds more in that we can figure out from the exceptions and the exception stack. And again, as I said last in the earlier slides, write frequency and write contents is very tuning parameters are very important here when this session data is lost, because if you are having the write frequency is too high, like 300 seconds, I said, for example, if you are trying to save the data into the database, it will not be saved until that time reaches. So these are the write frequency and write contents. You need to look into those kind of settings. And as I said, set attribute, you need to set the attributes after you get the attribute and modifying the attributes. Check to see if all the session attributes in the custom settings will help. So we normally check all these attributes in the custom tuning settings. And next one is the best practices. Here are some best practices that I outlined. Keep amount of the data stored in the session minimal. Do not keep much huge objects. And release the HTTP session objects by invalidating the sessions when you are finished with that particular objects or that methods. Implement serializable. We already discussed this, developing the new objects to be stored in the HTTP session. When the secure data is stored in the session, use session and security integration features in the secured environments that we discussed for the HTTP secure request, right? And avoid trying to save the reuse the HTTP session objects right outside the servlet or JSP service. Try to use them inside the servlet or JSP service only. So when using the multi-framed pages, create sessions only in one frame or before accessing any frame sets. So do not try to create sessions, more sessions for each and every frame, update this, and then update the session data using only one frame. So next one, here are some additional resources for the HTTP session. First one is the Info Center is a very good resource where we can find entire information. And the second one is the IBM Session Listener that I was discussing. You can see what are the different methods available and the API for the IBM Session Listener interface. And then best practices using the HTTP session is one URL I outlined. You can that helps really a lot. And the last one, but not least one, is the serverless specification. These are the additional, WebSphere product resources where links to a number of slides that provides valuable online resources for the WebSphere products. So visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchanges webcasts, like what we are attending today. And you can access also the previous recorded presentations also. And then Developer Works is also a very good in-depth technical information you will get. And visit WebSphereUserGroups.org also for user groups information and more product information also. So another one is the IBM Education Assistant. Consists of many modules for keeping up to the new users, learning with a less learning curve. And the SR tool is the Passport Advantage client tool to open and update and view the PMRs online. So my notifications link is also on all product support pages. Lets you sign up for weekly emails updates for products of interest to you. This is the end of my presentation. So now I will hand over to Joseph. Thank you very much, all.
Thank you, Farun, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Kathleen, we would like to open the line for questions.
At this time, we do have one question.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, my mute button is open now. Regarding the clone ID, in the J session ID, Warren told me that we have the clone IDs which the web server, the plugin will use to which server the request should send. What parameter will decide, how many clone IDs will need to be exit present or represent sent to the J session ID?
Thank you for asking this question. So it all depends on how many cluster members you have. So internally, Session Manager maintains a table with all the clone IDs and for each and every JVM, one clone ID will be associated. So if you have five JVMs, then five clone IDs will be there for each and every JVM. And if the request is going to JVM 1, let's say, and if it is failed over to the JVM 2, then the clone ID information will be tagged at the end of the J session ID cookie. So if this if that request goes to the third server, then the second JVM's clone ID will be tagged to that particular J session ID cookie. So it all depends on plugin will route to the particular clone ID depends on the table that we present while sending the J session ID cookie to the plugin. So that's the internal one.
Yeah, hi. And one more question is is the order necessary to give 1st JVM, 2nd JVM, and 3rd JVM, or any order could be fine?
So you mean to say order for what?
Yeah, order for now we have 3 JVMs. So how the J session ID will arrange it, 1st JVM, JVM 1, first clone ID, JVM 2, 2nd clone ID, and JVM 3, 3rd clone ID, or any order?
So that's a good question because you have 3 JVMs and JVM 1, 2, 3, and the very first request comes, right, the plugin will decide which JVM it needs to send because depends on the round-robin algorithm that it has. And let's say if it is going to JVM 2 first, then as long as the server is up and running, you will see only one clone ID in the J session ID, not all of them.
So do you mean to say that like when the default, the first JVM is down, then only will the JSON ID will show the other two clone IDs?
That is correct. So you are not sure where JVM, if the first request is going to JVM 1, JVM 2, or JVM 3. So whatever the wherever it goes, whatever the clone ID associated for that particular JVM, that clone ID information will be tagged to that JSON ID, and if for any reason that particular server goes down, then the request will be failed over to the other JVM, then that clone ID information for that particular JVM associated, right, that also will be tagged at the end of the JSON ID.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
At this time, we do have one more question from Jose Hernandez. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. So if memory-to-memory replication is easier to maintain and probably will give you a better performance than database replication because you don't have to access a database, under which scenarios would you suggest to use database replication instead of memory-to-memory replication?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. The thing is, the main drawback with the memory-to-memory is if you have a very huge load, incoming load, and huge data to be replicated from one JVM to the other JVM, you will see out-of-memory problems because of these scenarios. So if you are running out of memory and if you are having issues while replicating the huge data, huge set of data from one JVM to the other JVM, then we would recommend to use database persistence because database, it can handle the huge data. But the only pitfall while using the database persistence is it connects to the database, but you also can control that by with the use of tuning parameters. But memory to memory, the main advantage is you don't have to use the external database product.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
No problem.
At this time, we do have one more question.
It's TVS again for me.
Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Yeah, hi, Varun. This is like in the database persistent failure mode, in the slide I have seen that like when the first JVM was crashed or down, it will go to the second JVM and it will first search in its memory whether the cache data is there or not. Then if it is not there, then it will go to the database and it will find the information and it will serve the request. So, I mean, my question is like, even though we have opted for database persistent, why should the website application server should check in the server's memory first before going to the database?
Yeah, because if the request got failed over to the second JVM, and if it is not checking in the memory, let's say it is checking into the memory and getting the, let's say it's checking in the memory and if it is not there, then only it will go to the database. So it gets the data from the database and it stores in memory again, right, before it sends the data information, the session information back to the clients. And this next subsequent request, if it is not checking in the memory, then you are making a useless call to the database again. So it will check the session data if it is present in memory first. If it is available, then the second time it will not go back to the database.
So, I mean, does it mean that the database persistent eventually implementing the memory-to-memory persistence or...
No, it is not checking in any other JVMs, but it is checking
only the
own JVM.
Oh. Okay, it's checking the means it's like a local session persistence.
That is correct. It is checking in its own heap and own JVM. It is not checking from the other JVMs. It will not check the other JVMs memory at all.
Okay. Even the local session will do that thing, right? Because in the database persistent, we are just storing it in the database.
Yes.
But in local session, we are not storing it in the database.
You are not storing the data into the database, but what if that particular server goes down, right? Entire data will be lost and the users are impacted, right, if you are using the local session. So that is the advantage of here using the database persistence or the memory-to-memory persistence.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
This time there are no other questions.
Thank you, Kathleen. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation.